Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to this all English version of the weekly podcast Allt du behöver veta om ny teknik, or All You Need to Know About New Technology. My name is Per Danielsson and I am the editor-in-chief of Sweden's largest technology media brand, Ny Teknik.
And my name is Anna Åring and I'm news editor at the same publication. Today we have a very special guest, Jessica Meir, the American-born NASA astronaut who recently came back to Earth after spending almost 7 months at the International Space Station. Jessica was born in Maine, in America, but has also Swedish citizenship alongside with the American.
Yes, so we would like to think that she's a Swedish astronaut.
Course.
At the moment, Jessica is back on Earth, adjusting to be here, but she has her eyes and mind on returning to the space station as soon as possible. But not only that, in this episode, she tells us about the daily life at the space station.
And she talks about how it was to be in space when the coronavirus started to spread around the world. And she also tells us about how it was to perform the spacewalks, and why being part of these first all-female spacewalks in history was not a big thing for her and her colleague Christina Koch at first.
Yeah, that's right. And we also find out why she wants to be part of the crew that are about to go to the moon in a couple of years. And also, she really would like to be a part of a journey to Mars as soon as it's possible. And much more, of course. So let us invite Jessica Meir to the podcast. Hi, Jessica, and welcome to our podcast. We're so glad to have you with us. How are you?
And hey, son, jättetrevligt att vara här. It's great to be speaking with you today. Looking forward to it.
You have some Swedish background. Can you please tell us about it?
Yes, I do. My mother is from Sweden. So my parents actually met and were married in Sweden and then moved to the U.S. in the early 70s. So I was born here in the U.S., but I'm a dual citizen, so still have my citizenship in Sweden.
Do you visit Sweden sometimes?
I try to whenever I can, but of course there hasn't been much visiting of anywhere recently since I've been back from space. But I actually studied a semester abroad at Stockholm's Universitet when I was an undergraduate and have visited several times. Many of my mother's family still live in Sweden. She was really the only one that left. So yeah, I try to get back there whenever I can, whether it's for vacation or for work visits. And hopefully I'll be able to come again soon next year sometime so I can share a little bit more about my mission.
Great. You spent 205 days at the space station. Do you miss it?
Absolutely. Every day. I would much rather be floating. And I often say gravity is overrated. It's just so much fun to be in space. And even at the end of that 7 months, I wanted to stay longer. If it were up to me, I would have stayed longer. But unfortunately, it wasn't my decision and I had to come home. But I think about it every day.
You're actually a biologist. So what's the difference to be a biologist up in space compared to on Earth?
Well, you know, I think as astronauts, our backgrounds are important toward the expertise that we have. But when we're in space, you know, I kind of like to say all astronauts are created equal. And just because I'm a biologist and scientist, that doesn't mean that I'm just up there doing science. We're all very well-rounded and we all have to fulfill all the job functions, whether it's the scientific experiment, fixing the toilet, changing the light bulb, going for a spacewalk. And that's one of the things that I really like about the job. So differences between here on Earth. Well, as a biologist, of course, I don't have all the different living things that I do here on Earth. And when you look out the window of the space station, it's kind of ironic that you can see all of these living systems, all of these incredibly beautiful ecosystems, but you can't experience any of them. You can't feel the breeze in your face. You can't smell the mountain air. You can't go for a hike in the woods, but instead you have this incredible vantage point. So it's a little bit ironic. So I think as a biologist, I did miss some of those elements of nature, but not even as much as I thought that I would, because you just have so many more amazing things around you all the time when you're in space that I actually didn't really find myself missing anything on Earth.
Can you describe the space station for us and describe an ordinary day? How is it up there?
Right. So physically, the space station is about 250 miles, about 400 kilometers above the Earth. And it means at that altitude, which we call low Earth orbit, it is orbiting around the planet every 90 minutes. So traveling very fast, 17,500 miles per hour. And it truly is an orbiting laboratory. Volume-wise, it's probably about the equivalent of a five-bedroom house, but end-to-end-wise, it's about the size of an American football field or maybe a little bit bigger than a soccer field, depending on your point of view. So the main purpose of the space station is, of course, scientific research. So we are doing experiments ranging from how spaceflight and microgravity affect the human body, so physiological medical research, biology, biotechnology, protein crystal growth. You can grow larger and more pure crystals in space without gravity, combustion science, even flames burn differently in space. And the interesting thing about all the types of experiments that we do is that they're not only relevant toward space exploration and improving our lives of astronauts or exploring further in the cosmos, they also have tangible benefits back on Earth. And we say that off the Earth for the Earth, and it's really very true in that we have these direct benefits. So for example, the protein crystal growth experiments, because you can grow these larger, more pure crystals, you can isolate protein structures that you wouldn't be able to on Earth. And that has led scientists to develop pharmaceuticals, so some therapeutic drug strategies to interface with proteins that are relevant for disease states like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, muscular dystrophy. There's actually a drug right now in clinical trials that was a direct result of research that the Japanese Space Agency did on the International Space Station. And that drug is in clinical trials for Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. So all of these things, the combustion science has corollaries toward fuel efficiency on Earth, as well as to future space exploration propulsion systems. So many different examples, and we can certainly talk more about specific scientific experiments if you'd like, but the average day on the space station is really a mix of doing those scientific experiments and then also just doing everything that we need to live and work successfully on board the space station. So all those kinds of maintenance activities of any particular system, like the thermal control system, the power system, the fixing the toilet, changing the light bulbs. As astronauts, we have to be able to do all of those things. One day you might be doing a spacewalk if you have to fix something on the outside of the space station, or for example, during my spacewalks, we were upgrading the power channel, replacing those batteries with new lithium ion batteries. So any day is a mix of all those types of things. And when you wake up in the morning, you have your breakfast, get dressed, get ready for the day, you have a daily planning conference, and you look at your schedule on a special computer program that we have, and all the information that you have and need for the day is there. So it has an outline of each activity, the procedures involved, the equipment involved, and you basically just follow that whole plan for the day until your work is complete.
So are you fully concentrated on the tasks that you have to perform up there, or do you have time to look down to Earth and think about what's happening down there? For example, when you were up, the coronavirus was a bit started to spread around the world. Were you aware of that, and did you talk about it?
Yes, absolutely. So as far as the coronavirus, it was very interesting to be a part of that from our vantage point. It was really quite surreal. You know, I launched in September of 2019, and there was, you know, we didn't know the words. You know, I didn't know what the word coronavirus was, actually, because that's a whole group of viruses. But we didn't know what COVID-19 was, and it didn't exist yet. And so to watch all of that unfold from the space station, it was quite surreal, partly because, as you were talking about, we were very focused on our job and we were very busy. So just understanding how to process what was happening, you know, we're going about our normal day, we're looking down on the Earth, it looks equally as stunning and beautiful as it did the day before, and to try to understand that 7.5 billion humans, everybody down there was being affected by this, and we weren't. It was this really strange dichotomy, this strange feeling. And when we were getting ready to come back, Chris Cassidy, our colleague, he had flown up. We overlapped by about 8 days, he and his two Russian colleagues. And he said to us, you know, you really need to prepare for this and realize it is a very different world that you're going back to, and you need to be ready for that. And he was right. I mean, it was very strange to realize that we were coming back to a completely different planet than the one that we left. And I think I'm still having some problems or trying to adjust to that. You know, it is very strange, I think, for all of us to realize the magnitude of what has happened this year.
But when you come back from space, are you more vulnerable to a virus like corona than compared to others?
Yeah. So one of the hallmarks of spaceflight, and we know this from previous physiological research, is that there is a dysregulation in the immune system while we're in space. So for some reason, whether it's the isolation, whether it's just this lack of gravity, the radiation, all of these things as an interplay, there are changes in their immune system. So astronauts sometimes have a reactivation of latent viruses. They sometimes might be more susceptible. So when you come back down to Earth, you are potentially immunocompromised. And they can even directly measure that by looking at things like our T cell counts and our immune system. So what they did was they actually kept us here at NASA in quarantine for a full week before we kind of were released out into the wild and were allowed to go home, just to make sure that we had time for our immune systems to get back up to where their baseline levels so that we would be protected. But it certainly was a concern for everybody at NASA. And so they had some very stringent protocols in place to make sure that they would be able to keep us safe.
You mentioned the spacewalks, but is walk really the best word to describe this event? Because you made three spacewalks and all three of them lasted for about 7 hours.
Yeah, that's right. And it is interesting that we decided to name them spacewalks. It kind of makes sense if you're on the surface of the moon or another planet because you are walking around, but we certainly are not walking when we are in pure microgravity on the space station. You're using your hands. You're really not using your feet to move around at all. So perhaps it could be better named. And they are quite long. You know, they are actually metabolically, it's more like the equivalent of running a marathon than it is for then going for a walk, of course, because it really does use a lot of strength in your upper body just acting against this very massive and pressurized spacesuit. So there's a lot involved. It is, as I mentioned, the most challenging thing mentally and physically, but also the most rewarding thing, and certainly a highlight of my mission were those three spacewalks.
The first of your spacewalks with Christina Koch in October last year, it was the first all-female spacewalk ever, and this became a news story all around the world. And as I understand it, at first you questioned this, why it had to be such a big deal.
Yeah, it's interesting how that journey kind of evolved for me, because, you know, I think if you talk to other women in fields, sometimes it feels like, why are we just paying attention to it because I'm a woman? Shouldn't it just be, you know, my achievements that got me here? So part of it is thinking that way. And, you know, also for me, I never did feel like I couldn't do something because I was a woman. And now in hindsight, I do realize that I'm very fortunate for that, because of course we do still have a lot of ways to go in terms of making sure that we truly do have equity in not only gender, but also in representing all minorities and really making sure that we are representing all of humanity when we do go further and explore. But I think for me, it did, the event, our all-female spacewalk did mean a lot more to me after the fact, after it happened. You know, when we first arrived, I'd only been on the space station for a couple weeks, and I was still really getting used to doing everything in space. And then I had to get ready for the spacewalk, which, as I mentioned, is the riskiest, the most challenging thing that we do. It does demand all of your focus and concentration. So I wasn't even letting myself, I didn't have time to think about that from a more philosophical context or historical, the historical significance of it. But after the fact, when I saw how excited and how inspired so many people were, that really opened my eyes to the magnitude of what we had accomplished because of how it touched others and because of the role that it seemed to play in generating that kind of enthusiasm and excitement for NASA, for exploration, for dreams coming true, all of those things. And I felt, and I know Christina feels the same way, we didn't look at it as really a personal achievement. We did feel like it was us just doing our jobs that day, but more so we look at it as a tribute and an homage to the generations of women and other minorities that came before us, when there definitely was not a seat at the table. And there were so many of those individuals that were pushing the boundaries and truly breaking those glass ceilings to allow us to be where we were today. We've come a long way. We certainly have further to go. And so now I think it's our role. I hope that they can revel in our in this success and celebrate what we've accomplished because of them. But now I think it's our turn to try to inspire and to reach out and to keep that momentum moving forward. So, you know, this event, it certainly did mean a lot to me and does still to this day, more and more so when I think about it and talk to other people and understand how it touched and inspired them.
Earlier this fall, you were named one of the Times 100 most influential people because of that spacewalk.
Yes, that's right. And that was incredibly humbling. I mean, we both felt so privileged to be part of that list, especially this year when you think about the magnitude of events that were taking place worldwide with the incredible contributions of the frontline workers, civil rights activists, so many people making such a difference. So we were definitely very surprised, but are feel very, very privileged to be part of that group.
You mentioned earlier about everybody should be feel represented in space. The ISS is it's an international project where people work together regardless of citizenship, religion, and gender. But before you went to space, many wanted to claim you. Like we in Sweden want you to claim a part of you because you're a Swedish citizen. I think maybe in Israel, because of your father's heritage, people wanted to claim a part of you, maybe also in your home state, Maine, in America, and women of STEM. So who do you feel you represent in space? And is representation and diversity important in space?
I do. I think it's incredibly important, as I mentioned, in terms of making sure that we all go forward together. And so I'm very proud to have such international connections really worldwide. To me, it just shows how connected we really are as humans and how we have so many more commonalities than we do differences. And that's just something that is so easy to see from the perspective of space. You see those interconnected land masses and the oceans, and you don't see those man-made geopolitical boundaries we've imposed on ourselves, and you realize how connected we are and how we truly are one human. So I very much revel in that. I love that I have these connections and people claiming me all around the world because it shows that we are so connected. And I think that that is just a very important perspective that everybody could benefit from, particularly with what's going on in my country now, worldwide, really, with everything that we're struggling with, this still ongoing COVID-19 situation. We're in this together and we truly are one human, and we need to remember that in terms of how we treat each other on a daily basis, but also when it comes to how we deal with other people in other countries and all around the world.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot maybe your new best friend. but what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So you train a lot before you're going up to the space station and simulates every process, I guess. And in space movies, the most exciting thing or exciting part is when something unexpected happens. So did something unexpected happen while you were there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that not as many unexpected things happen as do in the movies. There's definitely always a lot more drama involved in, on the Hollywood scene. But absolutely, we do have to be ready to react to those unforeseen events and circumstances. And they do happen, you know, whether it's something as simple as doing an upgrade or replacing a component on the toilet and then something breaks or something doesn't fit because it was manufactured a little bit differently, and just being able to adapt to that. Or during my spacewalks, in the second and third spacewalk, there were both some events, one in which Christina's helmet lights and camera actually became detached from her helmet, which is not something that's supposed to happen and you can't actually put together outside in space. So we had to react to that real time and be able to deal with it. And that's one of our, I think, most important characteristics as astronauts, is to have that ability to think outside the box, to remain calm, and then to solve the problem at hand. So I think it's just something that we work through, and NASA has been so successful at during so many examples throughout our history. And part of that is just that trust and that reliance on the incredible training that we have, all the people that have invested so much in us, and also these incredible ground support teams that help us. You know, when something like that does happen in space, it's not just me reacting to it. I also have my team up there, and I have an incredibly large team on the ground that's helping us solve all of those problems and react real time. And I think that's something that NASA does very well.
The ISS has been up there now for 20 years, and from what I understand, the next goal is actually to visit the moon in a couple of years. Will you be part of that journey?
I hope so. You know, it is a very interesting time right now. In November, this month, we are celebrating 20 years of a continuous human presence on the space station. So pretty impressive feat. For 20 years, we've had humans on that orbiting laboratory without any break. And now we do have the Artemis program, where we are looking at sending the first woman, the next man, back to the surface of the moon and eventually onto Mars. We're building the spacecraft, the Orion spacecraft, right now that we will take to those destinations, and the Space Launch System. So incredibly, incredibly exciting time for us to be astronauts. I would love to be on those missions back to the moon. That would certainly be a dream come true for me, but we'll have to wait and see how it plays out.
But would you also would like to travel to Mars?
Sure. Once we get there and we have the infrastructure ready to be able to have that mission in place and bring astronauts back safely, absolutely. I would love to be a part of it.
So why do we have to visit the moon and also go further on to Mars?
Well, to me, it's really twofold. I think, first of all, it's just an inherent part of our human species to explore, to have this drive, to look around the corner, to go further. And that is incredibly important for us as progressing in a society, as a civilization, to have that scientific curiosity. Basic science is what drives all of that. So I think it's very important to continue our investment in all of these types of basic science and technology and infrastructure. And that's twofold in the space program, in that the things that we're doing also have these direct benefits, tangible benefits back on Earth, like we spoke about earlier with some of the specific experiments. So I think this drive, this is just an inherent part of our human characteristic that we need to foster. And I think that there are so many outcomes and applications and benefits toward continuing that exploration to help us. The moon is the next step. We do things at NASA incrementally, going from low Earth orbit of the space station, then to the moon, then on to Mars. It makes sense to do it that way because we can build upon and improve upon our existing technologies and take them one step at a time in order to explore.
So you mentioned earlier that when you returned from ISS, you were sort of quarantined at NASA. But how did you adjust to life on Earth after that? What did you do and how was it?
Yeah, it was quite a difficult adjustment for me. As I mentioned, I would have stayed up there longer if I could have. I didn't really want to come home, and particularly not to this changed planet. And one, when I came home, I couldn't see my loved ones. I couldn't do the things that I hadn't been doing for 7 months. So that did make it more difficult. But what cured me was actually returning to nature and immersing myself back in nature. I left Houston after the first couple months and went to see my sister in Colorado, and we spent a lot of time outdoors, hiking and camping. And of course, that's one of the nice things about nature. Those are still the things that you can do safely, even though COVID-19 has changed the way that we go about our daily lives. So I found that nature really did ground me and cure me. I spent some time with my brother in California as well, hiking there in the ocean again, really just integrating back into nature. So I think that's brought me back to where I need to be in order to cope and deal with the way things are here now.
You said you want to go to the moon in that Artemis expedition, but do you think you will return to ISS also?
I'm not sure. I would love to be on another mission. That's certainly a possibility. You know, right now, we will still have many more years of the space station. So it will really depend on where we need astronauts and how all of that shakes out. I could do another mission back to the space station, whether it's flying with the Russians again or flying on one of these new vehicles. You know, we are launching from the U.S. again with the SpaceX Dragon, and hopefully in the near future with Boeing Starliner as well. So lots of different rides to space, which makes it such an interesting time to be an astronaut and to think of all the different options that are out there.
We talked about that earlier, that the SpaceX suit is much cooler than the NASA suit.
I really like the Russian Orlan suit as well. So, you know, very reliable suit there. But yeah, I think things, of course, do look much more modern with SpaceX's vehicle because they are. It's a new design, and the Russian Soyuz design has been around for quite a long time. So just different aspects of technology.
We are getting closer to the end of this interview, but I have to ask you, when you meet people that you don't know, they come up to you, ask questions, are they inspired by you? And what kind of questions do they ask?
Well, you'd have to ask them. I hope they're inspired, and I've received that feedback from people. But, you know, there are a lot of the same types of questions that were asked again and again and again. But a lot of times, you know, it's the younger kids that will sometimes ask the most interesting questions or things that you haven't even thought about yourself. But we get asked everything from how do you go to the bathroom in space? How do you sleep in space? What do you eat? A lot of these basic everyday habitability type questions are sometimes the things that people are most interested in.
Right. Thanks a lot for this interview, and I hope that you will be one of the persons who goes to the moon.
Tusen tack. Jättetrevligt att prata med dig. Hejsan till alla i Sverige.
It was great talking to Jessica Meyer in this episode. Anna, what are your thoughts about her adventure and the will to get back to space as soon as possible?
I think it's very striking that she longs for the space. She didn't want to go back to Earth. I think it's not far to the International Space Station. It's only about 400 kilometers. But it's a completely different world, and she describes that very well, I think. A very limited space at the station, but also the possibility to look out over the whole world at the same time.
This was the first all-English episode of this podcast, a podcast created by Sweden's largest technology media brand, Ny Teknik. Please check us out at nyteknik.se and drop an email if you want us to produce more episodes in English, and don't hesitate to suggest topics or persons to invite. Send your thoughts to per.dinielson@nyteknik.se. All the best. Bye bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.